From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello talks with Register Washington, D.C. staff writer Peter Jesserer Smith about the heightened U.S. and world response to ISIS. And Jeanette and Register Foreign Affairs correspondent Victor Gaetan discuss the role of the church in the crisis in Ukraine. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Peter Jesserer Smith, is a staff writer with the National Catholic Register. Before coming on board with the Register, he was a Catholic freelance journalist for both the Register and Our Sunday Visitor, as well as a 2011 graduate of the National Journalism Center. Peter is here to discuss the growing threat of ISIS and the response from the U.S. and the world.
Peter, you, along with Joan Desmond, have been covering the crisis in the Middle East for the Register for just about all summer. It's been a hot summer in this regard. And this week, on the eve of the 13th anniversary of 9/11, President Barack Obama addressed the nation in a speech about the U.S. response to ISIS, which is now called Islamic State. Can you summarize what the president had to say?
Absolutely. The president was saying on Wednesday night that ISIS is a terrorist organization, pure and simple. And the other point that he was trying to make was that ISIS is not Islamic. And by that word, he'd be in agreement with the patriarchs who spoke here at the In Defense of Christians, in that what they're doing in the name of Islam is absolutely horrible and barbaric, and it's a form of Islam that is relatively new. He outlined four big points on how they were going to, on how the United States would destroy ISIS. One is a systematic campaign of airstrikes against ISIS, both in Syria and in Iraq. The other prong of this approach is increasing support to forces fighting ISIS on the ground, one being the Kurdish forces in Kurdistan that are right at the front gates of ISIS. The other is the Iraqi security forces, including supporting Sunni National Guard units. And the other point was also arming the Syrian moderate opposition in Syria to fight ISIS. The third prong would be was enlisting regional partners in counterterrorism operations against ISIS, and the fourth was providing humanitarian assistance to innocent civilians whose Muslims, Christians, and many other minorities that have been attacked by ISIS.
Now, Peter, you mentioned in your response that you've been at a conference. It's called In Defense of Christians. This conference is in Washington, D.C., and it's brought together religious leaders from around the world to discuss the situation in the Middle East. Obviously, with the president's address being on Wednesday night, and the conference was also that day and Thursday, can you tell us what participants had to say about the president's remarks?
Participants are still feeling out the president's remarks from what I've been able to gather from the people I've spoken with. On paper, it looks very good. It looks promising, but there is definitely a sense of urgency. That was expressed. There are Iraqis who are without basic supplies such as shelter, and the winter is approaching rapidly. And there's a definite need to see ISIS driven back from the plains of Nineveh and from Mosul so that these people can return to their homes and have shelter and the things they need to get through the winter. Right now, they do not have that. So there's a desire to see the president follow through aggressively, both in creating a safe zone for the Iraqi Christians and other minorities, but also to provide desperate humanitarian assistance. And humanitarian assistance is something that is needed not just now, but yesterday. And that is what they're looking for, is follow through. Sure. It looks good on paper. There are some concerns about the moderate Syrian opposition. One person said, if they couldn't defeat Assad, how are they going to be able to defeat Assad and ISIS? Mm-hmm. It's hopeful and concerns at the same time.
Sure, absolutely. And of course, Joan Desmond blogged on Thursday morning about is this too little too late? So our readers can certainly take a look at what Joan pulled together there in that blog, and of course our other coverage this week about what the president had to say. Now, Peter, the conference in defense of Christians, you've attended it. There were many people who attended it. I think the first time a conference like this has been held there in D.C. this year. Tell us the purpose of the conference and the main speakers.
Well, it's a very historic conference. There's been a need for a long time to recognize the situation of Christians in the Middle East, and to realize and to educate people that they are part of the fabric of the Middle East and essential for peace in the Middle East. Now, this conference was rather unique in that it drew together a lot of different thinkers and speakers from various think tanks. We had Robert George, the eminent Princeton professor, advocate of religious liberty. We had Nina Shea, director of the Religious Freedom over at the Hudson Institute. A lot of experts, Congressman Fortenberry, Congressman Chris Smith, spoke as well as we had religious leaders from both East and West, from Cardinal Wuerl to Cardinal Sandri, from Prefect of the Congregation for Oriental Churches from Rome, and the very historic Catholic and Orthodox patriarchs from the Middle East united, all there, or some of them having sent their representatives to ask for Christians in the United States to show them solidarity, but also the people of the United States and the West to learn about the Christians and to realize that they are essential, and that defending, the most important point that they wanted to stress was that being in defense of Christians was in being in defense of all people of different faiths in the Middle East, whether they're Christian, whether Yazidi, whether they're Shia Muslim, whether they're Sunni Muslim. To be in defense of Christians is to be in the defense of all. So what they're doing is they're raising education and advocacy and trying to do proactive activism for that end.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Register correspondent Peter Jesser Smith, who's talking to us from Washington, D.C., about the conference in defense of Christians. Now, Peter, this conference, it sounds like a very interesting event. Wish I could have been there. But can you share a message, any particular message that one of the speakers or a couple of speakers were really trying to get out so that our listeners can take away something from this conference as well?
I think the big thing that the speakers wanted to present, and especially the patriarchs, and it may be something that Americans over here may grapple with, but what they were trying to stress was that ISIS and other similar terror groups do not represent true Islam. And that is as they know it. They were emphasizing that Muslims are not our enemy, and that there are many, many Muslims in the Middle East who are suffering grievously under ISIS, whether they are Shia, whether they are Sunni, whether they are Kurds. What they wanted to emphasize was that as they are coming here to plead their case, they are not merely coming to plead the case of Christians. Mm-hmm. They are coming here to plead the case of all, and what they're looking for is the solidarity of the West, of the solidarity of the Islamic world, the whole world, against these Islamist fundamentalists who are trying to seize Islam and seize the interpretation of Islam to justify horrible, horrible crimes. Jeanette, it should be emphasized that while there's been enormous, what ISIS is doing to Syria and Iraq is something that hasn't been seen since the 7th century. And not even when the first caliphate came around. It was actually when the Persians came around and destroyed everything Christian, everything Byzantine at the time. Mm-hmm. Absolute devastation. What we are seeing today is a return to that, but it is far more extreme. It is far more virulent. It is far more hateful than the first caliphate, which they are pretending to emulate. That is the message, which is stand in defense of Christians, and to do that is to stand in defense of the peace of the Middle East. They are very hopeful-oriented, and they believe that even though all this suffering is happening, it is like being in labor. There is going to be rebirth, and it is going to be beautiful for the Middle East, but we must hold on to that hope.
Well, we very much hope that that is the case. Now, this is probably our last question. You know, there's been a call for moderate Muslims to speak out against these atrocities. Was that discussed, or what do you have to say to that?
That was definitely a topic of discussion. I had an interview with the head of the Armenian church. And he said, they call him His Holiness, he said that we do need moderate Muslims to speak out, and their voices need to be encouraged. Bishop Angelos, of the representative of Pope Tawadros II of the Coptic Orthodox Church, made the point, however, that we need to be proactive, and we need to be proactive in supporting the moderate Muslim voices. And this is in tackling, this also involves tackling the root, one of the root causes of Islamic fundamentalism and extremism, which is enormous poverty and illiteracy. If they can receive education, if they can receive infrastructure, if they can receive social services, people are far less inclined to be receptive to the fundamentalist message that their version of Islam is the answer to their suffering.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter, thank you so much for covering this very complex and very important topic for the Register. We're always grateful for your work, and we look forward to following more of it. So thank you.
Thank you.
When we return, we'll talk with Victor Gaitan about the situation in Ukraine. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, Provider and Protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DiMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Victor Gaitan, is a Register correspondent whose writings focus on international issues. Victor also covers religion for Foreign Affairs magazine. He's here with us today to talk about the situation in Ukraine.
Now, Victor, it's been a busy week in Ukraine. Obviously, for 5 months now, there has been conflict between Ukraine and Russia. More than 3,000 people have been killed, as reported by Reuters. But I'm also seeing reports this week that there has been progress in regards to peace. Can you tell us about what's happened this week?
Indeed, the situation in Ukraine seems to be getting somehow on the side of peace. President Poroshenko has announced very recently that in his words, the Russian troops are out of the country, mm-hmm. Which is, if it is true, an extraordinary news.
That's great news. Well, we hope that it is true, and we pray that it is true, and I'm sure there are many people there in Ukraine and in Russia who are praying for peace here. Now, Victor, could you give us some background on the Ukraine crisis from a Catholic perspective?
The role of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church is very important. We have to get a little bit into the recent history of the Ukrainian Catholic Church, which has been suppressed under communism, under the control of the Soviet Union, and from ashes, so to speak, came back, reinvigorated as a very strong element of the society. The Greek Catholic Church, together with the other Christian churches, has been very involved and in a dramatic way contributed to the dismantlement of the corrupt Yanukovych regime to the end of the presidency of Yanukovych's. Recently, as we know, in February, at the end of February of this year, the importance of the Greek Catholic Church, which numbers close to over 5 million people in Western Ukraine, stems from the deep faith that they have practiced for throughout the centuries, I would say.
What are some of the signs of this reinvigoration of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church?
As I traveled recently to throughout Western Ukraine, I saw everywhere people praying at daytime, at nighttime. For instance, to my surprise, I haven't been able to see a similar church activity in Western Europe many time in my memory. At daytime, the churches were packed. This was during the week, no particular holiday, no particular religious holiday. The same as night. At night, priests were giving masses, giving participating, singing in the churches together with the faithful at up until 10 p.m. at night.
Sure. Wow. Now, and the church has had a role even in the uprisings last fall. Can you tell us about their role at that time in the protests last fall?
The church, and in particular the Greek Catholic Church, together with a small numbers of Orthodox and Protestant believers, have been probably the movers of the demonstrations in Maidan Square during November to the end of February of 2014. These protests became very much an ecumenical gathering. Priests were giving the masses in from the different denominations. Priests were participating in saving and giving medical treatment and offering food and clothing to the demonstrators. So thousands of priests from the different parts of Ukraine, not only from the Western Ukraine, participated in those demonstrations, which led, as we know, to the downfall of the Yanukovych regime.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Register correspondent Victor Gaitan, and we're talking about the crisis in Ukraine. Victor, you wrote a piece recently for the Register. It's called Ukraine, the War Nobody Wants, the Salvation Everyone Needs. And this was about the crisis and also about your time in Ukraine as you traveled around and the people you talked to. There was one line, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, you said the churches were full and you saw a vibrant activity in the churches. There was one line in this that I really liked, and it said something about people praying in the pews, but also sitting there talking quietly in the pews, almost as if it was a cafe or a coffee shop, you know, just coming together and finding solace in the church and with each other. What were they saying about this war? We know they're praying, but what are they saying about this conflict?
Well, the general feeling throughout Western Ukraine, now I didn't go to Kiev, I stayed there on the safe side, so to speak. There was most people, Greek Catholics, there are other communities in that part of Ukraine. There are Hungarians who are Catholic and Calvinists. There are Ruthenians who are Greek Catholics. There are Romanians who are Orthodox and Greek Catholic. Most of these people were very opposed to the war in the eastern part of Ukraine. In fact, they were even demonstrating at times. I ran into small demonstrations refusing to respond to the call to go to the regular army. They definitely opposed the eastern fight.
Right. Now, what is the Vatican's perspective of this conflict?
The Vatican, in the direct address by the Pope, is an attitude of prayer. The Pope himself came out several times since the conflict, praying and asking all the Christians to work for the peace. Now, Pope Francis himself has friends, very good friends in the hierarchy of the Greek Catholic Church in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. For instance, the present leader of the Greek Catholic Church, Patriarch Savchenko, is someone who had a working relationship, a regular working relationship with the Pope back in Argentina when Pope Francis was the Bishop of Buenos Aires. At the same time, the Vatican, the Pope himself, has continues to have a relatively very good dialogue with the Orthodox Church from the different countries. And the relationship between the Vatican and the Orthodox Church is a very precious relationship that has been grown for the past 50 years. And right. In my view, the Vatican is not ready to give up that relationship because of the conflict in Ukraine.
But the Russians seem to have a very different view of this conflict, and it's a view that perhaps isn't being told very well in Western media. So if you could try and give us an idea of what a Russian perspective of this conflict is.
Well, Putin is, of course, being portrayed as the major troublemaker in this crisis. But we keep in mind that he considers himself a devout Christian and has indeed presided over a real renaissance of Christianity in Russia. I think we need to take seriously his concerns, not just call him names. Mm-hmm. And this is what Pope Francis seems to be preoccupied with. He avoided throughout these months making very undiplomatic accusations against Putin personally and against the Russian Orthodox Church. Now, Russia, as throughout her history, has presented her stand vis-a-vis Ukraine and the different communities in Ukraine, in particular their concern with the protection of the Russian Orthodox on the eastern border of Ukraine, and considers the NATO move as a hostile move, as Putin keeps reminding us.
Well, this is still a very sensitive situation. While there seems to be some peace this week, there have also been little instances of breaking the ceasefire and things like that. It really feels very sensitive. The perceptions of Russia, of Putin, by the West are not good, and this is very frail, a fragile situation. So where do you see this going?
Well, there are encouraging signs. Only in the last in the past 10 days, we witnessed a meeting between Putin and the president of Ukraine in Minsk. And the other day, the two presidents, President Poroshenko and President Putin, had a, as it has been reported, a lengthy, constructive telephone conversation, which led to the announcement, the recent announcement that was made by President Poroshenko that the Russian troops, quote-unquote, have left town. One other element which is very important in that construction is the role that Chancellor Merkel of Germany is playing, and the long-standing relationship that she has had with Putin himself and the rebels. Of course, the relationship between Germany and Russia, it's a it went through different phases throughout the recent history. But the role that Chancellor Merkel is playing and can play is can be a very positive role.
Well, Victor, you know, it's always good to have you writing for the Register. Your coverage of international affairs is important to the work that we do, and we hope to see more of your coverage of the situation in Ukraine. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
By the way, Victor is quite a globetrotter. You can check out all of his travel blogs by going to ncregister.com/blog/VGAETAN. Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen to or download the show. Thanks again for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.